From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
I think this attack is a dramatic escalation in the Gulf, and I believe that we absolutely need to stop this kind of escalation.
That was UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres speaking with reporters Wednesday as the new session of the UN General Assembly opens at UN headquarters in New York.
We absolutely need to create the conditions to avoid a major confrontation of the Gulf that would have, as we have seen by the immediate impact on oil markets, if there would be a major confrontation in the Gulf, it would have devastating consequences for the region and globally. This is the moment to cool tensions, and nowhere is there more important than in the Gulf. This is also the time to promote dialogue and pave the way to political solutions, from Libya to Yemen, from Syria to Israel-Palestine, from Afghanistan to South Sudan.
Heads of state and foreign ministers from more than 190 members of the UN are expected to take part in the annual general debate, which begins Tuesday in New York.
With a very high number of world leaders coming to the United Nations, we have a chance to advance diplomacy for peace.
We bring you as much of that press conference as time will allow.
Thank you, Secretary General. It's always a pleasure to see you here. My question is on Iran. The official Iranian agency said that President Rouhani and Foreign Minister Zarif still didn't receive the visa to come to the General Assembly next week. Which would be the consequences if this would really happen? And what will you do if this would be the case? Thank you.
Now, we have been in contact with the host state in order to solve all outstanding visa problems in relation to delegations, and I hope that this will allow to solve the problem.
Thank you. Edie?
This is trapped. Sorry. Thank you very much, Mr. Secretary General. Following up on the attack against Saudi Arabia in the Gulf. The Saudi government said that they would be willing to have UN experts come to investigate. Is this going to happen? Have you actually been contacted and asked? And I'm going to be bad and ask one other follow-up question of something that was supposed to happen before the GA. Your special envoy for Syria, Mr. Pedersen, was hoping to be able to announce the formation of the Constitutional Committee before the high-level meetings. Is this going to happen?
Well, thank you very much. First of all, Indeed, in line with the resolution 2231 of the Security Council, with a clear mandate for that purpose, the UN experts indicated by the Department of Political and Peacebuilding Affairs have already left for Saudi Arabia. And obviously they will be doing their job according to the mandate that the Security Council has given them. This is not the first time, as you know. It is something that is clearly defined by a Security Council mandate. In relation to the Constitutional Committee, there is now an agreement among all parties on the composition of the committee, and Geir Pedersen is doing the final work with the parties in relation to the terms of reference, and we hope that this will be very soon concluded. And I hope that this will be a very important step in creating the conditions for a political solution for this tragic conflict. On the other hand, I would like to say, independently of the results of whatever is going to be produced by these experts and others, that I strongly condemn this attack. I think this attack is a dramatic escalation in the Gulf, And I believe that we absolutely need to stop this kind of escalation and that we absolutely need to create the conditions to avoid a major confrontation of the Gulf that would have, as we have seen by the immediate impact on oil markets, if there would be a major confrontation in the Gulf, it would have devastating consequences for the region and globally.
Talal?
Thank you, Mr. Secretary General. The spokesman for the Saudi government, the defense ministry, just a few minutes ago, that it is time for the international community to get involved. As a Secretary General,
to get involved
in the whole investigation, accountability for the attacks, etc. Do you, as a Secretary General, do you see that it's time for the Security Council to take part in this file now and preserve peace and security, not only in the Gulf, but maybe in the world? And secondly, what's the effect of such an attack on confidence-building measures in Yemen when the special envoy, Martin Griffiths, is working tirelessly to build, through the Hodeidah Agreement, through the Stockholm Agreement, confidence-building, and we see such an attack takes place?
I think the mission of the Security Council is to deal with all the threats to peace and security. And I don't think there is a more serious threat to peace and security in the world today than what's happening in the Gulf. So this is clearly an area where I'm absolutely sure the Security Council has a key role to play. In relation to Yemen and the Yemen talks and the situation in the progress of the Stockholm Agreement, Martin Griffiths will not give up. And we need to persist in the difficult moments, because when we give up in the difficult moments, we make things worse. So I think the suffering of the Yemeni people is so dramatic that we need to do everything possible to make sure that whatever gains can be achieved, we need to move ahead with the perspective of implementation of the Stockholm Agreement and of creating the conditions for a political solution to be possible in Yemen. But obviously, the present situation is not easy.
Maggie, then Ali.
But we don't give up.
Secretary General Margaret Bashir, Voice of America, to follow up on my colleagues. So the experts have gone to Saudi, but the 2231 report isn't due until December. If they come back, will you come back with new information or findings? Will you release those before December or will you wait? And then a real question, a second question, if I might, since that was just a follow up. Human rights groups are calling on you to call for the closing of detention centers of the Uyghurs in China. Will you do anything next week during high-level week when you meet with the Chinese delegation? Will you speak to them firmly about this issue?
Well, first of all, in relation to the first question, the experts report to the Security Council. So it will be for the Security Council to define the timing and the process that will be followed. In relation to the second question, I don't think anyone has been more persistent and more clear in talking to the Chinese authorities in relation to this issue than myself. It is absolutely not true that I've only done discreet diplomacy. On the contrary, if you remember, in my last visit to Beijing, I not only did raise the issue, but I made it public. And I said more publicly. I said that all human rights need to be fully respected in that situation. And I said that it is very important to act in a way that each community feels that their identity is respected and that they belong at the same time to the society as a whole. There couldn't be a more clear message. So if there is an area where I believe I've been doing publicly much more than many other leaders around the world is this, and I will, of course, go on with the clear perspective that we need to act in order to guarantee that indeed human rights, all human rights in all circumstances, are fully respected in that situation.
But does that mean closing the detention centers?
It will mean to do everything that is necessary for human rights to be respected.
Ali?
Thank you, Secretary General. My name is Ali Barada with Al-Sharq Al-Awsat newspaper and France 24. Just from your moral authority and integral part of the United Nations, do you consider those attacks on Saudi Arabia as act of wars against Saudi Arabia? And my question is on Tunisia and Sudan also, where there is a glitter of hope in the Arab world. What would you say about the situation in Sudan? And we saw that transition is going on, and in Tunisia there is elections, and there is obviously a new political era. Thank you.
I have already said it. I think this attack represents a very dramatic escalation, and it should be condemned. It's also a violation of international humanitarian law. And as I said, it is very important that this is not repeated and that this escalation stops. On the other hand, I must say that we should all admire the fact that Tunisia has had the first round of its elections in a perfectly normal situation of a mature democracy, and I strongly congratulate the Tunisian people for that. And Sudan is a matter of great hope for us. I believe that what was possible in the dialogue in Sudan demonstrates that all political conflicts can be solved by dialogue when there is political will for that. And this should be a lesson for everywhere else in the world. It is time now for the international community to support Sudan. Sudan is in a very dire economic situation, in a very dramatic economic situation. I hope that all the restrictions that exist about Sudan, namely the classification as a country that supports terrorism and sanctions, will be quickly removed. And I hope that there will be a massive mobilization of resources to support Sudan overcome the extremely difficult economic situation that the country has, because if that doesn't happen, obviously we risk that the gains in democracy, human rights, and political solutions that were observed could be put into question.
Sherwin, Bryce, please.
Thank you. At the back here, SG, I'm waving
sorry,
at you.
Hi. Back.
Ah, sorry. I'm not going to stand up, Michelle. The Federal Environmental Agency and President Trump of the United States have announced that it will be rescinding California's waiver to set its own vehicle emission rules, which are more stringent than the rules at the federal level. You might also be aware, SG, that tailpipe pollution is the largest source of greenhouse gas emissions in the United States. What? Since the U.S. withdrawal from the Paris Climate Change Agreement, you have focused on the role of states, the role of cities, the role of businesses, as a countermeasure to what is happening at the federal level. Clearly, this is an action that undermines the cause which you seek to address at your climate change summit on Monday. What say you to this latest move from the Trump administration?
I am strongly in favor of a decentralized approach to these measures, and I'm strongly against any reduction of that decentralization. I think it's important that, and this is true for many countries in the world, that cities and states and regions have the capacity to develop all positive measures in relation to climate action.
Thank you. Abdelhamid.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary General. My name is Abdelhamid Sayam from the Arabic Daily, Al-Quds Al-Arabi. And my question, Mr. Secretary General, about the measures that the UN take to punish countries who do not preserve international law and Security Council resolution. There have been many countries had been subject to embargo and sanctions, as you know. There is one exception to this rule, which is Israel. It has been in violation of international law and Security Council resolution since its inception in 1947, Resolution 181. What could be done to convince Israel to abide by international law and Security Council resolution? And second, do you still believe that the two-state solution is viable, feasible, and achievable? Thank you very much.
Well, in relation to the first question, the answer is very simple. Sanctions are decided by the Security Council. And we have seen, in relation to that case, but also in relation to other cases, that vetoes do not allow Security Council majorities to express themselves into consequences. These are the rules we have. And obviously, the Secretariat cannot decree sanctions when the Security Council doesn't do it. The second point is very clear for me. I don't think there is a plan B to the two-state solution. I do believe that the two-state solution is still possible. I recognize that many unilateral actions were being taken to undermine it, but I strongly support the need to preserve it as something that is essential also not only for Israelis and Palestinians, but for the region and for the world.
Li Lingtang, China Global Television.
Secretary General, Li Ling with Feature Story News and China Global TV Network. Now, you've spoken extensively about how you won concrete action from the Climate Action Summit, not just fancy speeches. Can you elaborate on what exactly, in terms of scope and scale, would be satisfactory for you? What would make you happy? And how do you anticipate the youth movement, the momentum from that, to help get these concrete actions and drive the narrative next week?
Well, first of all, in relation to the youth, I think it's absolutely remarkable the leadership and the initiative that the youth is showing everywhere in the world. And it's understandable. Climate change is not only a threat for the end of the century, climate change is already a tragic problem of our societies, but it is true that if things go on as they are, the young generations, when they come to adult age or to the last periods of their lives, will be even more dramatically impacted. I have three grandchildren, and I don't want to be responsible for them to live in a semi-destroyed planet when they'll come to my age. So the youth has been showing an enormous leadership, and I hope that that leadership will have a very strong impact on the societies as a whole, on their families, and based on that, on the governments of their countries. What do we expect from the commitment in the summit? We expect countries to commit to carbon neutrality in 2050, and there is already a meaningful number of countries that have done so, and I hope that in the summit there will be even more. And we commit countries to present a strong, we have asked countries to present strong commitments in relation to the improvement of their nationally determined contributions, as defined in the context of the Paris Agreement, and that are supposed to be reviewed in 2020, according to the Paris Agreement. And I'm very hopeful that this will translate itself into the kind of objective we would like to see for the world, and that would mean a reduction of emissions in the next decade of 45%. It depends, of course, on many actions by many countries, but we are very hopeful that countries will come with proposals that they will be able to engage with. At the same time, very important to support the Green Climate Fund, very important to make strong commitments to support the developing world in adaptation and mitigation, to $100 billion that from private and public sources the developed world is supposed to contribute every year from 2020, and other aspects related to climate action in all its dimensions. I am convinced that we will come out of the summit with an enhanced momentum, not with all problems solved, but with an enhanced momentum. And the same in relation to reducing or eliminating subsidies to fossil fuels, to move progressively away from coal, to be able to support renewable energy, and for cities and states to demonstrate also their initiatives, and for the business community to present their own projects.
Pam Falk.
Thank you very much. Mr. Secretary General, it's Pamela Falk from CBS News. One more piece of climate. You have made a focus of climate at this UNGA, and the U.S. and President Trump have declared their intention to withdraw from the 2016 agreement, but that does not go into effect until after the next election, as you have also pointed out. Is there a way, particularly since almost 70% of the American public want some action, according to a new poll, is there a way that you have a message to President Trump to encourage both the commitment to the agreement that the U.S. is still in, and do you have a message to President Trump to try to get back in the 2016? I know you've said it before, but now is a time of reckoning. Thank you.
Well, my message is very simple to everybody, is that the contribution of the United States is essential, that the United States had a very important role in creating the conditions for the Paris Agreement to be established, that it is very important for the United States to come back to the Paris Agreement, but that it's not only a question for the government, it's a question for the whole of the American society. And I have to say, I feel inspired by the so many positive developments that I see in cities, including this city, in states, and some of them will be announced in the summit, and by the business community. It is amazing to see more and more, in the West and everywhere, banks considering that climate must be part of their concerns in relation to lending, rating agencies, including climate risks, central banks drawing the attention to the risks of climate in the definition of their policies, asset owners representing trillions of dollars deciding to divest from fossil fuels, starting by coal. So we are seeing a lot of very strong signals from the markets, from the private sector, that I believe will have an important influence also on the decision making of political leaders, even near us.
James.
Secretary General, James Bayes from Al Jazeera. You've spoken about the gravity of the situation after the attacks in Saudi Arabia, but of course you have all of these leaders coming to High Level Week in just a few days' time. What are the opportunities for your own personal diplomacy with the leader of the US, the leader of Iran, key representatives from Gulf states, including Saudi Arabia? What are the opportunities for your personal diplomacy to use your good offices in the next few days to try and resolve this? And there's been quite a lot of talk from many, including the Russian ambassador, about setting up a wider security framework for the Gulf region. Are those viable ideas?
Well, first of all, I've been in close contact with leaders of the region and with broader leaders in relation to the Gulf. Namely, I was with President Trump in the G20 and the G7. I met the Iranian minister here. I met Crown Prince Mohammed bin Zayed in Abu Dhabi. I had been in contact, close contact with the Saudis. And we have been doing whatever we can in order to facilitate the creation of conditions to avoid any escalation of the conflict, first of all. Many time ago, I launched the idea that, as we had during the Cold War, the Helsinki process, which did not solve the problems of the Cold War, but created a platform of dialogue. It would be interesting to have, on whatever area considered positive, a platform of dialogue that also could exist in the region. Until now, I don't think conditions are met for this platform to be established, but I hope that one day this will be possible. And I hope that conditions will one day be created for all the countries of the region to be able to live in cooperation, in peace, and without interference in each other's affairs.
Who objects to that idea of a platform?
I mean, there has been not lots of enthusiasm for the platform at the present moment because of the very dramatic situation that we are witnessing in the Gulf. So I don't think in this high level of tension an idea like this has chances to be accepted.
Iftikhar Ali.
Thank you, Stefan. Mr. Secretary General Iftikhar Ali from Associated Press of Pakistan. On August 8, sir, you made an important statement that deals comprehensively with the crisis in Indian-occupied Kashmir. It called for the end of restrictions, which have not been withdrawn, and that the status of the state should not be altered, and which India has done. And the lockdown is continuing, and the humanitarian situation is worsening in the occupied territory. How will you go beyond this statement and act to bring about a solution to this crisis?
Well, our capacity is related to good offices, and good offices can only be implemented when the parties accept it. And on the other hand, it relates to advocacy, and the advocacy was expressed and will be maintained. I go on with a clear opinion that human rights must be fully respected in the territory, and I go on with a clear opinion that dialogue between India and Pakistan is an absolutely essential element for the solution of the problem.
Apostolis, Cyprus News.
Apostolos Zoupaniotis, Cyprus News Agency.
Cyprus
News Agency. Mr. Secretary General Yoko Shelton, Jane Hall-Lud was in Cyprus for a week in the beginning of the month, but still there was no agreement on the terms of reference, no announcement about resumption of the talks. Since you are meeting all the leaders and all the involved parties next week on the sidelines of the General Assembly, what you are planning to do and what is going to be your message?
My message is that it's very important to quickly come to an agreement on the terms of reference to be able to start substantial talks that this time, I would hope, would be different from all past ones. So that is the meeting, the message I'll be conveying to all that all leaders that I meet. It's time to at least agree on terms of reference based on the work that was done, namely in Crans-Montana, because I'm a strong believer that the political process needs to be restarted. And I think that is also very important for the parties. I mean, I see a lot of impatience, namely in the Security Council, with the fact that there has been no progress. So I believe there are very good reasons for the parties to understand that, at least in relation to terms of reference, they need to come to an agreement.
Richard Roth.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Two quickies. Please describe the dynamic when you meet this, the President of the United States here. You have had talks with him. Do you see two sides? Do you get one view? And then he goes on stage in the UNGA and surprises you. And the second question, since we're headed to a strenuous UNGA again for you, how would you like to be remembered?
How would you like to be remembered is the second question.
Well, in relation to the first, I have to say that the meetings are always very frank, very open, and very constructive. In relation to the second, I don't care at all about how I will be remembered. The only thing I care is to do what I believe is the right thing.
Are you leaving soon?
Betul. Good. Okay, Maria from TASS, all the way in the back.
Russian Ambassador Vasily Nebenzia said that Russia is ready to give all the necessary data for the investigation in Idlib.
You mean the Board of Inquiry?
Yeah,
the Board of Inquiry. Also, he doubted the UN information about when the attacks happened and whether they really damaged the facilities mentioned by United Nations. So I wonder how the cooperation with Russia and Syrian government will go in this area. And I hear a lot about accusations of Russia in Idlib, but I also saw an information about airstrikes by United States, and I didn't hear any words about accusations of United States, so I wonder if it's fair enough. Thank you.
Well, first of all, this Board of Inquiry has very clear instructions in its terms of reference to act in an extremely extreme perspective of impartiality and to see what is the truth and not to abide by any agenda, but what is the truth. And by the way, it will be investigating situations, or will be looking into situations, both in the area that is under the control of the opposition and in the area that is under the control of the government of Syria. And we strongly hope, and the Russian government has already said so, that there will be a very positive cooperation also with the government of Russia and the government of Syria. Now, obviously, the number of incidents that this Board of Inquiry will be looking at is related to my competence as Chief Administrative Officer. And my competence as Chief Administrative Officer, because that is the competence I can have, because otherwise this would have to be decided by the Security Council or the General Assembly. In that, the investigation or the inquiry takes place in relation of premises that were under UN support, which means that there were funds of the UN involved in those premises, or in situations in which the conflicting agreements involving the UN were taking place. And so these are the only situations in which I have the authority to ask the Board of Inquiry to do the investigation. So it's not related to whoever is there, whoever bombed or not bombed. It's related to the very specific fact that the UN had an involvement in those specific situations.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.